Greetings, dear listener. You're listening to Nothing But The Blues. I'm the Colonel. This program comes from 4ZZFM in Brisbane, but you can hear it on community radio stations all over Australia, thanks to the Community Radio Network. You can tune into the show at a time that is suitable for you by going to the 4ZZ website, 4ZZZFM.org.au. Go to the program guide, find Nothing But The Blues on the Tuesday program guide, click on there and the rest is easy. But right now I have your attention, hopefully for the next 60 minutes. I'm going to be doing something just a little bit different this week, but tradition demands that I start the program with an instrumental, so here we go. That's Dan Nosevich on guitar. Dangerous Dan Nosevich out front of the Walters. And his instrumental, Toss and Slaw, which is on the debut album by Brisbane band The Walters. The album is High Time, Night Time. Put that on your shopping list. Now, as I promised here on Nothing But The Blues, I'm going to do something a little bit different this week. It occurred to me that it's 21 years since an Australian blues album was released, which has been one of the great commercial successes of the genre, because admittedly, you know, Australian blues albums tend to sell in rather small numbers. But in 1996, a division of Mushroom Records released an album called Short Cool Ones, and this featured two very prominent members of the Australian music community: singer and harmonica player Chris Wilson and singer and guitar player Mark Lizott, better known as Diesel, under the name Wilson Diesel. And coincidentally, at the time the album came out, there was a short run was done of promotional CDs which featured an interview with the two artists done by Melbourne radio identity Max Crawdaddy. And so we're going to go back 21 years and have a listen to the interview interspersed with tracks from the album, celebrating 21 years since Short Cool Ones came out. And to kick things off, I think we'll have a track from the album.
Chris and Mark about the project, which is it actually called
Short Cool Ones?
Yeah, it's called Short Cool Ones.
Is that the name of the album?
Yeah.
So obviously in reference to
height.
Now you've got to be talking the tracks on the album, of course.
Yeah.
And now, how much of a fight was it to get a list like? You've recorded like 20 odd songs with probably a dozen or just over a dozen or so to be actually released.
16.
Was there a bun fight to get whose track on there, or was it reasonably a cordial affair?
I thought we did very well, didn't you?
Yeah, it was a couple of meetings around the CD player and the cassette player.
Right.
You know, Chris made a compilation, a few compilation tapes, and I actually had an old Johnny Winter bus tape, which some of Johnny Winter's favourite songs, obviously.
Wow.
And that's where a couple of them came from. And we just kind of put our resources together. From the start, I think it was obvious that the songs that we kind of went towards were the kind of quirky ones, you know. They just had that something that was just, you didn't hear in other songs. And
I was going to say, it's not just your regular do a 12-bar sort of blues covers album too. I mean, as Chris is always telling me, in fact, blues isn't just 12-bar, which is quite true. I mean, you got quite a mixture of tunes there.
Well, I mean, what white people have maybe done with the blues have maybe simplified it and made it something that's kind of simpleton and boring. But when you listen to these old records, I mean, what they're doing, like, if you try to dissect maybe Willie Dixon's bass lines, you know, it's pretty, I mean, they're either really, really drunk or they're geniuses, probably both.
Both.
You know, because
mentioning Willie Dixon, you're doing quite a few tracks there, and I suppose you couldn't do a blues album.
Exactly.
Without, I mean, you could do the whole catalogue just about.
Well, it's like trying to do a
rock and roll
tribute album of the 60s beat music and not having any Beatles songs or something, you know.
Exactly.
That's really hard. Like, the feels were, when we started rehearsing the songs, the feels were so difficult to try and capture them, which is what we're doing.
Yeah, delicate.
Yeah, just, and like, you take one bar out and just doesn't work. Yeah. It's not the same anymore, you know.
Some voodoo there. So we cooked with them a bit in the rehearsal room and just threw things around it until we had something that had the vibe and the whatever was special, and that made us attracted to the song in the first place when we felt we had that. Mm. And, you know, the Leatherbacks treatment together, and when it gelled together, when it was Leatherbacks, that's when we thought, yeah.
So the bulk of the tunes are one or two takes?
Yeah, well, I don't think we did, apart from maybe Spoonful, which we did about 12, played that about 12 times, didn't we?
Yeah.
Because we did it, it was just too bombastic, you know. It just sounded too scary. I think we would have scared everybody away. And it just sounded too evil. So we had to kind of bring it in a bit, you know. It was mostly just sounds, because we're really, really, really cautious with that one. We wanted to really get the right drum sound and stuff. So we moved the mics around a bit. And when it's all live, you can't just kind of be sort of, oh, well, we'll fix that. That we'll get to that sort of, you know, the atmosphere or whatever you're wanting to create later. You've got to get it all then. You know, it's like doing setting a scene for a play or a movie or something. Everything has to be in place, then you shoot it and it's done. You know, there's no mucking around with it afterwards.
Everybody fighting by the spoon.
It's 21 years since the release of the album Short Cool Ones, featuring Chris Wilson on vocals and harmonica and Diesel on vocals and guitar. An important Australian blues album. At the time, Max Crawdaddy interviewed the two main artists, and that's what we're listening to on Nothing But the Blues. Just a point of information, you will hear Diesel referring to the Leatherbacks. This is the name that he gave to the studio band that was responsible. But in the event, the album was released under the name Wilson Diesel. So back to the interview.
Are you singing through a harp mic on that, or what effect is on that? There's a couple of tracks that feature that.
We sing through amps, basically, the same amps that we're putting our guitars through, just with microphones and harp mic or an old, you know, bullet-type mic here.
Excellent sound, yeah. There's a couple of those vocals on those tunes. And having said that, and listening to the recorded tracks in the studio, it amazes me why you guys haven't probably got together, because it sounds like you've been playing together like for years.
Yeah, well, that's the band, you know. I think the band kind of... I mean, I brought two guys from Sydney, and the bass player we got from was Melbourne, so we kind of, you know, crossed cities, and none of us had ever really... Well, I played with, of course, my keyboard player, Rob Wolf is in my band normally anyway. We've been playing with each other for about 2 years, and he was just so excited when I told him we were going to make a blues album, because, you know, he's really, even though he's only, you know, 25 or whatever, he's really kind of steeped in that music and really doesn't sort of cross paths with the keyboards. You know, I guess after about 1965, I guess it's the end of the line for him, because the Hammond, you know, piano and Wurlitzer and clavinet and things of that genre are really his bag. You know, he's technically phobic, you know, about anything newer than that, so it's perfect for him, which is really rare. These keyboard players somewhere sort of through the 80s sort of went right away from all those traditional instruments.
I was going to say his organ solo in Blue Red Roof.
Yeah, it's stellar.
Sets the feel sensationally on that track.
If you should see my little red rooster, I want you to please drive him home. If you see my little red rooster, please drive him home. Ain't had no peace in a barnyard since my little yard bird's been gone.
Those guys played with you live. Unfortunately, I missed the live gigs. What about the live gig? I think it was down there anyway.
Yeah.
What about in the future? Is there a chance? Obviously, when the album comes out, there's a chance that you guys, the Leatherbacks, will be back on stage again.
Absolutely. I hope it's the same band. You know, I mean, I think we're all dying to play live because I mean, after we got the tape of the ESPY, we were all kind of, you know, like Jesus. I mean, this is so good. Some of the tracks just came off like. Just, I mean, there were some really kind of sloppy moments, of course, and, you know, a few, you know, singing the wrong verses and that sort of stuff, you know. In 3 days, tried to get 25 songs together to play, to do a gig, so, you know, we bit off quite a lot and we're chewing on it quite, you know, vigorously.
So playing some of those 2,000 songs or whatever live, did that help the process for the recording?
To make a band, you know?
To give us a confidence that you know, you can't get unless you put it in front of a crowd. You know, I think it's the old cliche, one gig is worth 25 rehearsals. It really is, because you know, we're all hams, basically.
Yeah.
You know, whether we, you know, like to admit it or not, you know, put us in front of 20 people, or if one person comes into the rehearsal studio, you know, everyone just starts playing better.
But when we started recording, we wanted to have a band walk into the studio, and they have a band walk in to a recording situation. They gotta get their lumps too, you know.
Well,
we're either gonna, is something gonna work or not gonna work together.
There's some pretty thoughtful interpretations of some songs in there. Like, there's some tracks there we've heard a million times, like Spoonful.
Yeah.
But you guys seem to give it a bit more of a shine.
I've been lucky. I haven't heard, I mean, Spoonful, I mean, other people have said, Eric Clapton's done that one, or this person's, I mean, every Allman Brothers or whatever. I've never heard those versions. I only know, you know, the Howlin' Wolf version, so... am I lucky? I don't know. Tell me. To me, that's the definitive version. Maybe Tom Waits could do a good version. I don't know. There's very few people I would, you know. Nina Simone maybe do a great version.
That's another good thing about this album, I think, too, is that, you just mentioned, you were lucky enough to hear the original version. My introduction to Spoonful was through Cream, the Clapton version, Little Red Rooster, I heard through the Stones. The good thing with this album is a lot of local kids that are into blues and stuff will possibly shine on a couple of your interpretations and go backwards like everyone else did.
I think that's all, you know, we didn't want to sort of go straight back there and, you know, I mean, we didn't do it in mono, it's in stereo. but we really, you know, I'm proud of the fact that I guess that it does kind of lend itself more to, and I've played it to guys that are, you know, in their mid-20s and who are like cool with all, you know, with all that old stuff. And can recognise that it's like it's true to kind of more of that thing. It's not more of a supercharged 90s version of a sort of a white blues thing or even that 70s thing like the Fleetwood Mac, Paul Butterfield, all that sort of blues thing, which kind of was more of a electric, supercharged, you know, pumped up sort of blues thing. And I really wanted to try to stay away from that. And that was more of it. I think that only comes into like having 20-minute songs with five solos and where everyone just gets out of hand, where everybody just, the blues, let's solo till the cows come home. And that's, I guess, going back to the title again, was, you know, when we listen to all these old songs, but you know, it's the first time that when I'm thinking about making a record, that you realize that, gee, they're all really short and they're really encapsulating. They're like little, you know, pop songs and really cleverly put together. And whether they realized it or not, you know, I guess they were infiltrating through jukeboxes across the country back then, and it was the alternative music of its day. But I can understand why it sounded so cool, because it's just, they're so short and sweet, and everything's just perfect, you know.
Right, you can't get anything more perfect than a track like My Babe, I suppose.
Yeah, well, does everything it wants to do, minutes. And it gets under 3 minutes, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Stand no cheating, my babe. Oh yeah, she don't stand no cheating, my babe. Oh yeah, she don't stand no cheating. She don't stand none of that midnight creeping, my babe. True little baby, my babe. My babe, I know she love me. Oh yeah, well I know she love me, my babe. Oh yeah, well I know she love me. Don't do nothing but kiss and hug me, my babe. True little baby, my babe. She do, she do so pleasing, my babe. Cute little baby, my babe. My babe, but don't stand no fooling, my babe. Oh no, she don't stand no fooling, my babe. Oh yeah, she don't stand no fooling. When she's hot, there ain't no cooling.
You're listening to Nothing But the Blues. I'm the Colonel. And it's 21 years since the release of the fairly important Australian blues album Short Cool Ones, featuring Chris Wilson and Diesel. So this week on Nothing But the Blues, I'm revisiting the album and also having a listen to an interview that was recorded at the time with Melbourne blues identity Max Crawdaddy. So let's go back to the chat.
Process of recording, we mentioned before, you guys rehearsed the tracks a couple of times and then basically sat down and recorded them. Was there any special tricks in the studio you used with miking, old instruments, things like that?
We tried a lot of different ways. There's a little bit of ambient recording, you know, we just set microphones up in the kitchen. But mainly it was just, we rented a house up the bush. Did it in the house and recorded in the house rather than went to a studio. You know, the studio sort of came to us in a sense.
It was the most natural thing I've ever done. You know, I mean, I've been in studios that, you know, they've tried to get that kind of you're not in the studio feel. You're at home, but you're not. Bullshit. You know, and this is like you are in a house. You know, if something was a bit loud, this is what I loved was you just put it out the door.
Because
it was like get out. Like putting the dog outside, just put it out there a bit and put the mic on it, and it's still there because he had all these screen doors. So it was still like bleeding through, but it was just kind of things just move out of the house, and that's how we controlled it, you know.
You guys seem to be very, very happy with the results.
Well, it was exciting. We had a ball, and then there were some tracks like when you're talking about Spoonful and stuff, we did called Somebody Loaned Me a Dime, Fenton Robinson tune, and like that drummer was crying at the end of it, you know, because they really put a lot of, put a lot of themselves into it. Anymore, like they committed themselves completely to making a record, you know.
And so whose idea was it to put this Divine Trio, or I should say the Divine Duo together? This,
Michael Kudinski, Ian Smith.
So there's two people we've got to blame for this one.
Yeah.
Well, I saw Michael Kudinski's enthusiasm about the particular project some months ago. It was...
It's funny, you know, I think, you know, that whole Mushroom and you know, Ian as well. I mean, they go back with the blues for, you know, well, they, you know, they brought a lot of those acts that we, some of these songs that we did, brought these acts out years ago. And even one of the records, Hound Dog Taylor record, I didn't realise it was a, but it's a Toadstool label.
Yeah,
you know, that's Michael's like
Mushroom job. So yeah,
Michael really has a, you know, and Ian have a real sort of affection and appreciation for
it. So stuff like Two of a Kind, you know, which was Chain with Muddy Waters band, and this Chain, all that Chain stuff.
Carson?
Yep. And Broderick Smith's done stuff on Aurora since. I mean, that's the roots of a lot of the roots of my music.
There's a great acoustic track on there, Too Wet to Plow. I think it's the only acoustic one, is it?
Completely acoustic, yeah. I mean, with no amplification at all. And Angus Diggs playing a box with his foot and Rob Wolf playing a shaker, I think that's...
Yeah, it was in that kitchen in the house.
Guys that played live with you in the Leatherbacks and the studio guys, I believe you had a couple of other guests in the studio as well.
Gary Young and Wayne Duncan played on some tracks.
Just funny because they cut Cherry Pie years ago.
I was going to say, rhythm section from Daddy Cool.
But they had to learn it again.
So they actually played on that track?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they really laid back. I mean, he's just got the fattest backbeat. Yeah. It's just... So back, it's incredible. You nearly fall off the
stage. So how can
I just think that it was good? My feeling about it was that I wanted to have him play on there because it was also, it was like, for me anyway, it was like, it was that part of a continuum for us, you know, musically. You know, and I just wanted to have that school of musicians on our record, you know, like I was excited to have that. That element of history in there. They're still working musicians. They're playing up the road tonight. That's not what I'm saying, but it's that flavour in it. You know, because I really think that through people like Chain and Broderick Smith, etc., 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 and Dutch Tilders and blah 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 blah. You know, there is an Australian approach to that, to this sort of music, and Rob Broderick Smith and Matt Taylor blind, you know.
Well, both those players are very big influences on your harp playing, aren't they?
Yeah, huge. Pinched everything I knew off Matt Taylor, you know. I mean, I used to just listen to records and just rip off his licks, you know, all the time. The first harps I ever learnt was off Black and Blue, you know. And I learned it note for note. And it was the only solo I ever really learnt note for note of anybody, but it was such an instructive thing, you know.
Accessible too.
And it's right there. It's right in your backyard. Mm. And that sense of groove is there was one set of grooves with Parksy and Angus.
Yeah,
and there was another set of grooves with Wayne and Gary, and both legitimate and fantastic. No.
It was definitely another, you know, slice of inspiration for the whole album. You know, to have just two little scenarios for us.
Yeah, but it's exciting too, you know.
And they just played on Cherry Pie?
No, there's four tracks.
Yeah.
Wine, Women, Whiskey.
Yeah.
Cherry Pie. Sugar Babe.
Yeah.
What was the other one? Oh, See Me in the Evening, the Hound Dog Taylor song.
So how come you picked up on a track like Cherry Pie?
Well, it was on the tape that Mark had. Mm. But it was like the Professor Longhair version of it, you know.
Which I wanted to give to for Sir Rob. Yeah. Rob Wolf could have something that really just pounded on the bottom end of an upright piano. Because, you know, I knew he was really... He's a real Professor Longhair nut, so... Mm.
It's a great treatment of that track.
It's open. It's really, like, open. And when we did it at night, which is kind of late at night, at the end of the day, I think it was, you know, I was pretty tired and I didn't know what I was doing, really. I forgot about it, to be honest, until I heard it, and I thought it must have been the right time tonight to do it, because it sounds really lazy and just, I mean, if we would have done it in the morning, it might have been too full of beans and too much sort of on top of it, you know. But we were, like, just falling over. I think Chris's harp solo is just... It's just like a... It's at the end of it, it's just like a walk through the tulips. It's just it's just so sunny, you know? and lazy.
It's like it's a sensational thing. It
just sounds like fishing music to me.
Cherokee Dance. Who picked on that one?
Well, that was off this tape. This Johnny Winter bus tape, and that's just like hillbilly music.
Man, it's crackers. It's like a gooseneck music to me.
It's great. I mean, the distortion on it. Mm.
When I heard it on that tape, it made me hair stand up, and I haven't got much.
It's just scary. I've had this tape, and I've played it to a lot of people, and it's always a song that people go, "What the hell?"
You got to have a go at those. Like that's like that. That's like you know. A measure of how bent you can get, you know, really? I mean, you got to try, you got to aim at that. You got to go a bit fucking bats to play that music. People go, oh, blues, you know. You can't tell me any other form, any other song you know that's as mental as that. Yeah, and I don't mean that in a bad way. It's just, it's a thing unto itself. It's fantastic.
it's one end of the spectrum, because we've got, you know, things like that are really delicate, like My Babe, which is like doing that song was like walking on rice paper, you know. It's like everyone had to like really have restraint. The drummer was like getting cramps from just like playing the brushes so lightly, and you know, it was great because other people got to like the bass player Dean Addison, that was like right up his Strasser, you know. He got to like thump and let the double bass do its natural thing, you know, whereas other people were like, you know, I'm playing like just with my thumb, you know, I'm gonna use a pick on that because it'd be just too abrasive. It's that real jazz thing, you know. But you just turn the room mics up in those sort of songs, and I think that's is that the song where you drop your harp at the end and it goes tonk on the floor, you know. We all go, oh,
it was right on the beat. Strange Love was another one like that, because it was, that's a really, he's a strange man, Slim Harper.
There's a lot of Buddha involved in all stuff.
It's like real, that's like, you know, you go from stuff as manic as Cherokee Dance, as stuff as delicate and as spacey as Strange Love, you know. And it still comes under the general umbrella of blues, but
we just went somewhere else on that one. We sort of added this, like, Wurlitzer, which is kind of like almost Dark Side of the Moon, you know, sort of just trippy sort of Wurlitzer.
And bowed upright bass.
And drones. Put this bowed bass in it, which only comes in about halfway through and kind of makes your pants flap, you know, it's kind of subsonic sort of thing.
This week on Nothing But The Blues, I've been turning back the clock 21 years and having listened to the album Short Cool Ones by Chris Wilson and Diesel, and also sitting in on a conversation that the two guys had with Max Crawdaddy in Melbourne. But our time is just about up. Thanks for listening to Nothing But The Blues. The program comes from 4ZZZ in Brisbane. You can hear the program on community radio all over Australia, thanks to the Community Radio Network. And get online, go to the 4ZZZ website, and you can listen to the last six programs anytime you want to. But be sure to come back next week for more.
It's something that you worked on, not laboured on, but thought about maybe quite a bit about the actual sound of the song, is how you might want it to turn out.
In the rehearsal box, yeah, because once we got recording, we didn't have a lot of time. We just kind of had to take our little sketch that we had from rehearsals, and then just taking it up to the house kind of changed it a bit, I guess. And it's funny, like, you think you do the gig and you do the rehearsals, but when you actually get in there and, you know, you do put one down and then you listen to it, it's like, everyone sort of goes, right, okay, I know what I've got to do now. You know?
And then you
it's
go.
It's a real slap in the face, you know, because you think it's like, you think you're a god, you know, and then you listen to one take of it and you think, it's shit.
Especially when you go back and listen to the original to pick up a lyric or something.
Oh, God, yeah.
And you go, my God.
Yeah, what were they doing? But you just got to understand, you got to always remember, well, I always sort of bring up the reality was like everybody's, I mean, they were probably thinking that it stunk at the time too, you know, who knows? You know, it's just the thing, you're always your worst critic, and, you know.
I gaze down the rain against my window, bringing back sweet memories. Hey, window pane, you remember how sweet love used to be. When we were together, everything was so grand. Now that we're parted, there's just one sound I can't stand
the rain against my window, bringing back sweet memories. I can't stand the rain. Our love story, baby.
about how we met 5 years ago. You weren't sure and I did not know that we could come this far. But thoughts of time with you has filled my heart. Oh, love, I pray we never part. This man loves the one I saw. This is our love story about how I love about you, how we first met, and I need to be.